Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, we're back. We're black. We're brown. Ambition.
Yeah.
I'm Tiffany.
Hey, guys. It's Mandy.
Mandy, it feels weird taping like midday.
I know, but you know, we bend the rules for our friends, and we have a very special friend slash guest today. Do you want to do the honors,
Tiff? Yeah, I'm excited that... Well, she is, you might have seen her. She actually had her own show at one point. I mean, you've seen her, I'm sure, on the Today Show. Farnoosh Torabi, who is amazing. Not only is she a stellar financial expert and educator, Farnoosh recently, which is so awesome, started doing stand-up. How randomly cool is that?
I forgot about that. Yeah, Noosh is awesome. I've known Noosh for a long time. She's authored, I don't know, 3 or 4 different personal finance books. She has a massively popular podcast called So Money, the So Money podcast. She was one of the first personal finance influencers, I think, to launch a podcast like that. And it's been such an amazing journey for her. And I'm so excited to have her on the show because one of the reasons we've wanted Farnoosh on for a while is because both of us have been talking a lot about, you know, planning our careers and our paths to motherhood at the same time and trying to prepare as best we can for what lies ahead. And I couldn't think of anyone who's been more candid about becoming a mother and running several businesses than Farnoosh. And I just knew she'd be the perfect person to, I don't know, make us feel better about what's going on and give some great little pearls of wisdom. On top of that, Farnoosh is never one to stay in one place for too long. She just launched a new business, a new side project called Stacks House, which is a financial empowerment pop-up that she'll talk about on today's show as well.
Yeah, I'm excited because she's just a fun all-around, like, dope human being, and her kids are super adorable. Speaking of motherhood, I just spent all morning on the phone. So I never had to like enroll a kid before, like in a school, and I grew up, and I don't know how it was where you grew up, but you know, you just used to be like, oh, I moved to this town and this is the school that's close to my house. You enroll your kid. In Newark, it is so different. So I've been getting my niece, well, not my niece by blood, but you know, my niece by love. So for her mom who moved here last year to Newark last year, she couldn't get her into school. A public school that she wanted because I guess she moved like right at the school year kind of time. So I understood that because there's like a lottery system. But this year she applied extra early. You get to choose like 4 schools. She chose 4 schools and was not matched to any of them. So her mother was totally freaking out. So I was like, that seems weird and crazy. So I posted it on Facebook like, hey, Newark people, how does this work? And so isn't that weird? Like apparently this is true. You can choose your schools. And these are public schools. These are not charter schools. These are just regular public schools near your house and not get matched. I don't know how you're not matched to 4. So I've been on the phone. Honestly, by now I've spoken to the CEO of the United Way. I've spoken to like an executive at the charter school. I've spoken to a board member at the Newark Board of Education because I'm like, no, this is not right. And this is not just for my niece, but just in general. What is going on? And like, you know, I wonder if any parents out there have experience with like this whole lottery system. I'd heard of it before, but I didn't realize that you could literally not get matched.
Like, and that this is make sense. Public school or are they
special. Public. No, these are straight public, like, not, sometimes you can have like a charter school that's like, we're like a public school. And it's like, no, these are straight run of the mill. I mean, these are good public schools, but they're public schools nonetheless. So isn't that crazy that you can literally like not get into a public school, four of them by your house?
Yeah, man. New England is no, like, Northeast is no joke. New York, New Jersey, like, the things I've learned about public education up here, it makes me want to move back to Georgia real quick. Because when I was growing up, yeah, it was just like you were saying, like, the total opposite, you know, what's your school? Just look, you know, look at where you're zoned, you know, you have a choice of one high school, one middle school, maybe two high schools if you're lucky.
Yep.
And that's it. Like, the bus picks you up, you go, and there's no choice. It's just totally different here. How old is your niece?
She is 8. She's going to third grade.
Third grade. So it's like elementary school.
Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, excuse me. I was trying to mute it and I couldn't press the mute button in time.
It's okay.
But yeah, so this is not just for her. This is just in general. So I'm just trying to figure out. So we've gotten like a solution. Apparently it's like some family center place that you can go to. It opens up the 29th of this month. And you can go and kind of be like, so I didn't get into any schools. What do I do? But the earlier you go, the better. Mm-hmm. And so that's what she's going to do. And then you pray for the best. I don't know. It's not guaranteed. We can go to this family center place and they're like, yeah, girl. So you and everybody else wants a good school. But I mean, I'm hopeful, but it's also just disheartening because it's like, so what do you do? Do you either? So it's like one of two choices. Three. One, you send your kid to a school where the kids are failing, which is like, why would a parent want that? Two, you send your kids to a decent school, but it's super far. Like, Newark is huge. Like, we live in the North Ward. There are great schools in the South Ward. You're looking at like a 20-minute drive sometimes, you know, depending if you're going through traffic and stuff, you know, like, that's not a small thing to take your third grader. You know, and then third choice is that you put them in private school. And that's what she did last year. She put her in a parochial school. But, it was fairly inexpensive as far as Catholic schools go. But it was still money, you know, and she's like, we just bought a home. We're trying to save spending, you know, money every month for private school. When we pay taxes, we bought a house here. We started a business here. We pay taxes here. We went to college here. Like, I mean, I guess I'm not looking for to be overly accommodated, just accommodated like a normal parent should, you know? So it's just been an interesting process. And I'm like, wow, you know, how many parents, you know, don't have the capacity to advocate for their child? What do they do, you know?
It's really disheartening.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll give you guys an update. You know, by this time next week, I should have like an update. So hopefully it all works out. But ultimately, what I want is that I'm sharing kind of like the solutions that people have given me, like on my Facebook page, because that's where I posted the question. So, you know, I mean, because I know she's not the only parent. And that was the one request, that when I get some feedback, share the solutions. And honestly, the solution has just been to go to this family center and just share what's going on. And they're supposed to be able to help. And so, I mean, that's literally everybody who I messaged. That's been the same feedback from, you know, the charter school executive, the CEO of the United Way, the board of education member. Every single person said the same thing. So I'm like, well, let's hope that that's a real solution, you know?
Ugh. I mean, just finding like daycare is hard enough.
What?
Then you go, like paying for K-12, if you have to send your kid to private school, which some parents opt to do if schools aren't good. And then think about the cost of college on top of that. It's just,
It's just exactly. And it's honestly, it's one of the reasons why, like, Newark was under state control for like 30 years, something crazy. This is the first year that they're finally able to manage their own schools, because Newark schools were doing so poorly, public schools, that the state took over. And so it's crawling its way out of that. And if they want families to move here to Newark, you know, then they have to provide a way for them to have access to free and fair and good public education, or else people won't stay here. I know I won't. Let me wait till Super Baby gets here. If it's a problem getting my baby into like a good school, someone's like, well, girl, you're going to have the money to go to private school. And I'm like, well, first of all, I grew up in Westfield, which has one of the best school systems in the state. My parents purposely moved there because they were like, either do we pay for private school for 5 girls or do we pay taxes? And they opted for taxes. So you should be able to say that. So no, my kid will go to public school if it's a good public school. I have no problem with that, but they have to be available to them. So Yeah, you know, this is, I mean, like I said, this is, it's been very interesting, like, this morning, like, you know, so, this is what it is to have insurance.
Ugh. Well, did you, on the bright side, I mean, speaking of, like, the cost of education, so following candidates for 2020, because it's never too early to think about 2020, Elizabeth Warren, Democratic candidate for the nomination, presidential nomination, she's released a plan. She's like one of the only candidates who's actually releasing policy initiatives. So that's what I'm looking at is candidates' policies. And today she came out and rolled out a plan for what she would consider, she'd actually considered canceling student loan debt up to $50,000 of student loan debt for 42 million Americans in this new policy plan. Right? And the way she would pay for it is a few months ago when she first rolled out her candidacy, or a couple months ago, she rolled out a new private wealth tax, which would essentially put higher taxes on the rich, which we know recent tax reform did nothing, you know, to that effect. So she would raise taxes on the uber wealthy, and then with that increased tax revenue, she's talking about passing that on to student loan borrowers to help them have up to $50,000 of their student loans, their student loan debt completely eliminated, which would just change lives. I mean,
yes.
Talk about starting from behind. That would be huge. So
huge. No, honestly, I saw that like pop up in my feed, and I was like, honestly, that is an amazing idea. And yeah, I think, I mean, that it just, I don't know. Like, I look at my mentee. She's she graduated law school. She's now working as a lawyer. But when she first graduated, she was like, "What am I gonna do? My student loans are $900 a month." And I'm like, "What? They're a mortgage payment? Yeah. I don't even, you know." But I mean, I'm sure those are private loans. I'm assuming that you know, Senator Warren is talking about public loans. But still, student loans are crippling.
I wish that was my mortgage payment. Anyway, property taxes.
If you live in deep South Jersey or in the South.
No, but for real. So that was just fascinating to me. And, you know, especially when you look at stats that have shown, you know, everyone was so excited about public service loan forgiveness program and how it was meant to forgive student loan debt for people who took jobs and career paths and nonprofit or government work, only to find out that very few people really qualified because there were so many asterisks next to the qualification rules. So, you know, there's the student loan system is still so broken. So that's not, as I'm looking toward 2020 and what candidates have to say, like, I really want to see some actual policies with, you know, ways to pay for them. And it seems like Lizzie Warren so far has at least a plan to pay for such a program. And the implications for the economy are just huge. Like, if it's not just about giving people a free ride, it's like with $50,000 off their back, imagine what you could do, you know, qualify for a mortgage. Everyone's, you know, freaking out because millennials aren't, you know, getting into the home.
You could start a business.
Right. Start a business. Maybe not rack up credit card debt to finance your life. Get out of the rent trap. Like, there's so much opportunity. And when you also couple that with like stats on how disproportionate the student loan debt crisis impacts communities of color, you know, who are we really talking about when we say who will really benefit from the debt cancellation? It can be people of color in a big way, who already are so behind. So that was a bit of good news.
For next week, don't forget to remind me, because I'm like, did I tell you that I was looking for a new financial planner?
Yes, ma'am. We talked about that.
I'll give you guys an update of like, so I've been interviewing, I think I interviewed like, I want to say 5 or 6 people last week, and I have like 2 or 3 more this week. So I'll give you a little update. A couple people, I was like, yikes, are you sure you know how to budget, let alone financially plan? But you know, and some people were really awesome and some people were really aggressive. So I'll give you guys an update once I finish all of my interviews, and just, you know, share kind of like the process and a tool, something I created for myself that made the process 10 times easier. And I'll share it with you guys. So just putting that out there before Noosh comes on.
All right. Very excited to hear who you pick. Dope. All right, well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with personal finance guru, podcaster, entrepreneur, business owner, mompreneur, just all whatever the accolades are, she's got them, Farnoosh Torabi. Come back and join us. All right, BA fam, y'all know when it comes to financial advice, you have to trust your source. That's why you listen to Brown Ambition, right? And when I'm looking to upgrade my wallet, I turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. I've been a longtime fan of NerdWallet. In fact, I almost worked there a couple of times because when it comes to financial experts and writing, they really know how to give you the best reviews of financial products. I honestly wouldn't sign up for a credit card today if I hadn't looked at a review on a site like NerdWallet myself. And honestly, if y'all haven't learned about NerdWallet, you're missing out. And with their help, what could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade? Lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms of each credit card issuer apply. Okay, guys, we are back as promised with Farnoosh Torabi, personal finance guru, and recently co-founder of Stacks House, which I'm going to let her describe to you. But first, I'll say it is a massive personal finance empowerment pop-up that just kicked off in Los Angeles and could be touring to a city near you coming soon. Welcome, Farnoosh.
Thanks so much, ladies. This is so nice of you to have me on. And Stacks House is my latest project. I founded this with two other female partners, Kendra Meyer and Patience Ramsey. My co-founders come from the world of marketing, experiential marketing, brand launches. And with me, you know, the personal finance background, we were a really great team to bring forth to market this pop-up. And we're calling it, you know, Stacks House, we're calling it a pop-up with a purpose. So, you know, taking a page out of the success of all these other pop-ups like Museum of Ice Cream, Museum of Pizza, Color Factory, 29 Rooms. We want to be as successful as them. There's a cultural relevance and a cultural excitement around pop-ups, but we wanted to bring forth also a bit of purpose. And that purpose is to empower women as they go through the experience to feel confident about their money, to feel like it's not taboo, that they can actually, you know, take control of their financial lives. And we know that there are many solutions to this problem. We don't claim to be, you know, the pop-up's not going to solve all the world's financial problems, but we thought that, you know, with all the content that already exists in the world of personal finance, your great podcast, books, you know, courses, that what was kind of missing was this essential experience.
Yeah, you guys should check out www.stackshouse.com to buy tickets for Stacks House. Now, let's talk about the social media moments, because this is all about financial empowerment, but we all love a good Instagram moment. And right. All I'm seeing is the mechanical piggy bank.
Yes.
And I need to know more. Does it travel? Will it be traveling to future tour dates?
Mechanical baby. And the piggy bank really is meant to, and the ride is meant to illustrate, bring to life the movements of the market, the fact that the market can be unpredictable, up, down, sideways, round and round. We found that something like 86% of women have said that they have yet to get paid back for a small purchase amongst friends, whether that's like, I got you, I shared an Uber with you last night and I paid for it, or I got dinner last night. They're still waiting for that payment. Yeah. So we were like, as something as small as that to, as we know, like asking for a raise, we have this real trepidation around talking about money and asking for what we want. So that room has these beautiful illuminated installations. One's this massive cake that represents a celebratory occasion in your life. Another is an actual house that you can walk in, which represents like, you know, living in a home, that achieving that milestone. And in all of these experiences or life moments, how to speak up and ask for money, because like with birthdays and stuff, we get a ton of gifts that we never use. So why don't you ask for money instead? Or, you know, when you have a roommate and you're living with your roommate, making sure that you're talking about splitting the bills and having that important conversation. So that room is, you'll see that all over Instagram, this giant cake, or the home that we have, and this huge, like also this one part of the room that is this floral like decor that looks like a travel destination. That's also a life moment. We want to encourage women to travel and experience travel, but to do it responsibly, splitting the bill with friends and how to have those conversations. We also have a Stack Salon, which is a retrofitted salon that looks like kind of like out of, you know, Steel Magnolias or something. And in that room, it's really about creating this relaxing backdrop to then talk about negotiating and asking for your worth. So we've got excerpts from my podcast playing with people from like Susie Orman and Arianna Huffington talking about how to earn your worth. We have a She Stacks magazine. She Stacks is our parent company. So we have a whole magazine in there that has articles around how to negotiate and, you know, how to turn your side hustle into a full-time gig. And then we have in every room, I forgot to mention this, in every room, we have these electronic beacons that we call them beacons. They're these tall vertical stations that are driven by iPads that are, a lot of them are pop quizzes or they're asking you for more information about yourself so that we can give you more catered advice. So that's where we're trying to sprinkle in the literacy throughout the experience. It was a balance, right? So it's not this heavy-handed, you know, textbook financial experience. I thought that would be a little weird, frankly, but to the extent that we thought it was, you know, fun and appropriate and well tied into the room, we have these moments where you can learn about money. But we also hope to have like money schools, really good conversations around closing the wealth gap, you know, how the different sort of unique financial circumstances that affect people that are like women of color or marginalized groups, like how we can, you know, create better advice or tools or what are the systemic issues that we can address. Because, you know, again, Stacks House in and of itself is a great experience, but we really want to take it to the next level through conversation. And we have a dedicated space in Stacks House for those things. So if you two want to come and host do a live podcast from Stacks House, we would totally invite you to come. Mm. I think that would be fun. And yeah, so if maybe that's how I get you guys to come take your show on the road.
That's awesome.
I'll take it.
Okay.
Well, our other motivation for having you on, Farnoosh, was just to talk to you because you wrote this amazing article in Refinery29 about what it's like to be a successful mom and an entrepreneur. So let's jump into that. I mean, Tiffany, I know you have questions here.
Yes. And so I just wanted to ask, like, you know, with all that you do, if you guys don't know, you know, we talked a little bit about Farnoosh and kind of like what she does, and you've probably seen her on TV and she's got her podcast and she's got this new venture. How are you able, because as I, we talked offline that, you know, I'm trying to start a family with Superman and I am a little nervous. I mean, we have a bonus daughter, but she's 12 and, you know, a 12-year-old girl is like a 40-year-old man. I mean, she's, you know, fully, you know, she's like, I mean, since she was 8, I mean, she didn't need, you know, she doesn't need much. She can make her own breakfast, makes lunch, you know, we hang out. She loves Staples like I do. So it's not a heavy lift when you get to that age, you know. Plus her mom is awesome. So it's only 50% of the responsibility. But how, you know, how do you manage with little ones and doing all that you're doing?
Well, I will just say this, that I had the same concerns. And before I had kids, you know, I was like, how do these people do it? It gets done. Okay. But I think that, you know, just, I don't know you that well, but I feel like I'm already understanding that you have some really important kind of foundations in your relationship, in your work, in your mindset too. It's so important before you become a mom, a working mom, that you have a few things like sort of quote unquote figured out, or at least, you know, that you're aware of the needs. And one is that it sounds like you have an amazing partner, Superman. I mean, his name is Superman.
I mean, yes, he is.
That's pretty self-explanatory. So important. I don't know how single moms do it. I think that if you were a single mom, I would be beside myself. I'd say, I don't know how you do it, because I know, like, in my life, yes, I'm married to a great man and he helps me and supports us, but it's also like having a nanny and having friends who I can call and say, hey, can I, you know, can you watch my kid for, you know, the afternoon because I'm running late. So having a support system is really important. Knowing who your people are going to be is vital. So outside of even just your nuclear family, you know, are there neighbors, relatives, friends? You're not going to call on them all the time, but you'll be really happy to be able to access and leverage them in times of need. Having someone who can take care of your child like a nanny or a really great daycare or preschool that you love and trust is really important too. That's part of the how you do it. And you might not get it right the first time. You know, I know a lot of people who hire caretakers and it doesn't work out. So that's okay. It's just know that that's part of the process sometimes, because as a new parent, like sometimes you just don't know what you need. And so I guess the elephant in the room here is that to be able to have all these things, you need money. And yeah. I think that it is much harder when you don't have savings or steady income before you have kids. We know this, but I wrote about this for Refinery 29, that even when in my 20s, when I was far from having kids, I had kids in my mid 30s. I already could tell that having kids in New York City in particular, tri-state area, is really expensive if you want to continue working. Like, it's kind of ironic. Like, you have to be able to afford you have to work to be able to afford having kids, which is, you know, and you have to have a good job and a good paying job to be able to sometimes afford some of the basics. So making sure that you're financially set up is vital, and preparing for things like childcare. But I think also what I'm sensing from your question is like the management of it, you know, because yeah. you're busy, you're running off, you're doing speeches, you're traveling the country, you've got TV and like all your work. But I think that one of the beauties that happens when you have kids is that your framework completely changes, but it's okay. It's what you've wanted. And I realized that when I had kids, my first son, there were limitations as far as what I could do. Like, I couldn't just drop and go to California, you know, because some random television production company was calling, and maybe before I had kids, I'd be able to, but you know, I had limitations. I started my podcast as soon as I had a kid because of the benefits of how that worked with my new life as a mom. So a podcast I can do from home. It's something that still allows me to connect to all the women and all the men that I want to connect with. It's monetizable, and it's like, it doesn't require me to like get dressed up, you know, and put on makeup. Before I had kids, I was doing a TV show and like a lot of videos, which required me a lot of time and also like getting ready and the whole makeup and hair thing. Like, I wanted to kind of tone that down, and I was looking forward to it. And, you know, you're not going to be able to know everything that's going to happen, but for somehow like having kids makes you a lot more decisive around what it is you want to do and what it is you can do. And here's the thing, like, you've been working so hard all your career that you have now arrived at a place where now that you want to become a parent, you can afford to say no to things. And then the ramifications aren't going to be dire for you, right? Like you saying no to certain things versus you saying no 10 years ago to those certain things, whole different consequence. You're not going to want to say yes to everything. I wrote an article for Money one time that since becoming a mom, my income doubled. And I think it's because I got really, really acutely aware of the things that were important to me. I got really clear on my framework and like how I work. Like, I don't go on business trips that require me out of the house for two or three more nights, unless, you know, I just got back from LA for a week. That's a unique circumstance. But, you know, I used to just do things sometimes for free, never again. And if they're going to want me to travel, then they have to, you know, make sure that they get me back here within 48 hours, that the travel is accommodating, that there's money involved. I've become really good at negotiating, asking for my worth since I became a parent. And so I think you're going to be fine. I think that, you're going to be more than fine. You know, you have the support system, you have the income, you're driven, you know who you are. You're going to be a great role model for your kids too. Like, I can't wait for you to be a parent.
What if I'm like, I think about something like, what if I'm like, I don't want to do the budget list anymore. I mean, one of the things I did ahead of time is that I started an online school for that very same reason. And I was like, if I never spoke again on a stage, what does that look like? And so I said, well, I need income to still come in. And so my online school does really, really well. And it like probably makes about, I want to say like four or five times what me speaking and books and stuff as the budget needs to make. So as far as income, you know, the only thing is like, it's like I have people that are hired via the Budgetista, but even then we have some ideas in place of like how the Budgetista can make money without the Budgetista, me, you know? Yes. So it can, you know, keep that business running. So I'm not worried so much about the financial component. I guess more so like, you know, just it's a lot emotionally. I mean, when I babysit my niece, I used to ask my sister, like, hey, you know, you didn't reply to my text, or did you get that email I sent you? And she'd be like, girl, the kids are up. And I'm like, what does that mean? Until I babysat. And I was like, how do you even go to the bathroom?
Well, the truth is she doesn't sometimes. And sometimes it's Thursday and she realized she hasn't taken a shower since Monday. And I think it's important for parents to be a lot more transparent about the realities of raising a kid. So, you know, in starting Stack's House, I'm the only mom in the company. And you know, I don't want to always like use my family as an excuse, but the reality is like, I can't do 4-hour meetings on the weekends. Sorry, ladies, you know, like my life is just not there. I can't. And maybe I could, but I don't want to. I don't want to be that kind of parent that's away from her family on the weekends for 4 hours. If there's another way to do it, let's do it. So I'm really vocal about the fact that, you know, as a mom, there's just some non-negotiables for me. Like, I'm going to give you all this time, but then I need other times to be a mom, you know, and to be with my family. And I'm not apologetic about that. And I think that, you know, there's that saying where we want women to work like they don't have a family and have a family like they don't have work. And I think that that needs to stop. And yeah. I think people used to be afraid. Like, I used to be a little bit more timid about saying like, well, I can't, you know, I have to be home by 5 because my nanny leaves then. And now I'm just like, sorry, 5 o'clock is my witching hour. It's when my nanny leaves and I have to be at home. And I'm literally out of commission for at least 30 minutes because my kids are climbing my body for 30 minutes. And that's just the reality. Like, I don't, I'm not going to dance around it. That's just, it is what it is. And I feel so fortunate to be able to have that life.
I get to bring that to the women that work with me. We're like 90% women. And of the women, I would say, you know, more than half are moms. And of those moms, more than, you know, 60% of those moms are mothers of young children, like, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4. And so make it a point to make the environment in that, because we all work digitally, that they set their own schedule. There is no, you know, like your family comes first, second, and third. If we're having like my CFO, Rachel, she's amazing. She's got Manny, I think her son is 3 or 4, and Imani, her daughter, is like 1 or 2. And so sometimes, you know, Rachel is like diving deep into the numbers and Manny is like on the video chat, like, hey, Miss Tiffany, you know, just like chilling. And I'm like, bring him. You know, yeah. Because I want you, like, you shouldn't hide that part of yourself. You're a mom, and you're a mom who's just a killer CFO, but you're still a mom. And sometimes we have meetings and she's like, you might hear the kids, we're at the park, I'm pushing them on the swing. And I'm like, look, that's fine by me. I mean, they, you know, it's just, I wish there was more of an environment of that. The great thing is I do have a really great support system. My husband is awesome. And my team, they all know that I'm working on having a kid. And like I said, they have been awesome of like, what can we do that they literally have like Operation Tiffany's Baby, you know? And so, so they're so like, sweet. You know, so I'm fortunate, but it's like, yeah. So I guess it's more so the nerves of like, I'm 1 of 5 girls. I don't know how my mother did it. 1 of 5 girls.
And how did any of our mothers do it, honestly?
I don't know. I'm like, so you went to school, you worked, you raised up. I can barely take care of myself, I feel like, half the time. So I guess it's just a nervousness of the emotional component of how to manage. Because, for example, my publicist, Drina, she's got a young son. And I remember the first year or two when she would travel with me, say if I was like shooting something in LA and she would travel with me, she'd be at the airport in hysterics, you know? And I'm like, what happened? She's like, I left the baby. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I was like, it was so hard. I mean, it's not as hard now, but it's still really hard for her to travel and leave. So I guess that's just a component. I guess she just never quite get over that. And like you said, making sure that when you do work, that you're not gone as long, you know?
I would just say, you know, there's this real push in our society to get women back to work sooner than later. And women, I think we also have that pressure on ourselves. Like, I don't want to miss out. I need to go back to work. But to really, if there's one advice I would give you is like, after you have your baby, to just give yourself permission to feel however you want to feel and to act however you want to act, and not to feel like you have to follow a script or some sort of timeline to get back to work really quickly. Like, your body needs to heal. Your mind needs to get refocused. Some people call it like the fifth the fourth trimester, you know, where you've had your baby, but you're still, you know, you're not 100, you're not yourself again, you know, yet. You're a different person. You're a different person. You're not a lesser person or you know, just, you're just different. And so people sometimes don't give us the required sort of space and attention and support in those vital, you know, months following birth. I remember my doctor, she said to me, I want you to have your feet up for at least a week. I don't want you like, and I couldn't help myself. I wanted to clean. I wanted to like hold the baby a lot. I wanted to walk around. And that's, you know, everyone's going to be different, but if you're feeling like you need to slow down, slow it down. You know, you've earned it.
Farnoosh, I have to ask you about this one piece of advice you gave in that story, which resonated with me. Since I'm talking about it so much, I'll post a link to that Refinery 29 column because it was so excellent. So I have a girlfriend who decided after having a child that the job she was at, she was unhappy before she had the kid, and something about having a kid as an option to hang out with versus being at a job you hate just pushed her over the edge. And she actually ended up leaving that job and took several months off and then started a at-home consultancy business. And in that post, you know, you talk about if you decide to leave the workforce, you really encourage, and I don't want to, you know, put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong or misinterpreting, but encourage women to get back, like take time off, heal, be with your family, but get back to being in the workforce, or at least in some way or shape, one form, shape or another, earning wealth for yourself. Yeah. Can you talk about that?
I think that The foundation of that is just that I want women to be financially independent, right? So, you know, this idea that I'm just never going to work again, that really frightens me, truly. I mean, unless you have wealth coming in from an inheritance or just you were independently wealthy or you just saved a whole ton of money before you had a kid. I mean, I do at the core of everything that I talk about and teach and feel about women in finance is just that women need their own financial independence. And I know that after you have a kid and you're, you know, mom and all, you know, it's not possible to always be in the workforce, but to always have part of your brain thinking about your reentry. And it may not look like the career you had before having children, and it doesn't mean it has to, but thinking about your own financial solvency as a woman who now happens to also be a mother is worth thinking about and is worth strategizing around. And for everyone, it's going to happen at a different pace. So I'm not saying like it has to happen right away, but it is, I don't want that part of that thinking, that sort of strategizing in your head to go away. Because I think that it happens for a lot of mothers and dads too, for that matter. A lot of more fathers are becoming stay-at-home parents. And, you know, I have some pretty, I guess maybe controversial perspectives on stay-at-home parenting. I think it just stems from like, I just want everyone to have financial peace and independence. And you can't have it if you're not making any money. And I don't want kids to be an interruption to that. I think that kids are going to be sort of in some ways like a shift in your path and a good one. But like to always, I just guess it comes from a place of advocacy for women. You know, I really want them to think about how they can continue to make money.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And just to close that story out, I'm so proud of her because, you know, she's had two kids since leaving her job. Well, she had the one kid and then had a second kid in December. And recently, she started her at-home business, and her previous employer called her up because they were looking to fill a position. They actually let go of the manager that was making it really difficult for my friend to work there. And they just hired her back, and she negotiated a promotion and a big fat raise and all the things that sort of frustrated her about the job before, you know, no telecommuting privileges, that kind of thing. She was able to get that flexibility when they rehired her. So I'm super proud of her. And like she did it her own way.
I've heard a lot of anecdotal feedback that like employers love hiring mothers because they get it done.
Well, we could talk to you all day. We're so grateful to have you on the show, Farnoosh. Thanks for joining
us. Thank you so much. And I'll come back anytime.
That was our interview with Farnoosh Torabi. You guys, check out her podcast, So Money, and go to stackshouse.com to buy tickets for Stackshouse Financial Empowerment Pop-Up.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.